We're up to Parshat Lech Lecha. Good evening, Menachem. We are up to Parshat Lech Lecha. At the end of this week's Parsha, Hashem commands Avraham Avinu the mitzvah of the circumcision. Bezrat Hashem, if we have class Thursday night, which I think we will, I will bring in the tools of a moel. I do circumcision, so we could bring in the tools and see what they're all about. But right now, I wanted to begin with the end of the Parsha, because very often we don't have enough time at the end of our class. I want to start with the end, the mitzvah of Ebrit Milah. And after we understand anatomically what's going on, we could also have questions, discuss the halachot. But we're going to start with what you probably will never hear in your lifetime, and that is scientific, anatomic understanding of what happens at a circumcision. Meaning there are many things you might learn, but to understand what happens at a circumcision, most people never know their whole life. So I don't have a blackboard here, so I brought a whiteboard. And we're going to begin. When a child is born, so we're going to keep revisiting this drawing. If we're going to take a side view, the child's legs are coming out here. And this is the male organ. And at the top, we know there's the red, the gland. Okay? So if this is the male organ post-circumcision, when a child is born, imagine my blue is skin color. There's skin that comes up from the baby's stomach and covers the gland, such that when you look at a baby after a baby is born, what you see is skin color. You see a hole and skin color. You see something that looks like a finger. You see a slight protrusion for where the gland is going to protrude. At the bottom of the gland, we know there's a slight rim. Where that rim protrudes on the gland, you see a slight protrusion in the skin. But basically, what you're seeing when you look at a baby's gland is something that looks skin color, like a finger. That's what you see with the little hole on top, and that's the baby's gland. The mitzvah of circumcision is to take the external skin out here and cut it off. So technically, we have to cut around and cut it off. But Hashem made this external skin that it has a lot of elasticity. So what we can do is pull up the skin and the gland will remain in its place. So imagine the external skin is like a sleeve, and we can pull up the sleeve such that it looks like this. Slightly exaggerated, but with our finger we can grab the skin, the gland is down here, and we can cut. And what we've effectively done is we've only cut the outer skin down here, right? We've cut it under the gland, only we've pulled up this skin, we've pulled it up to here, so that this line over there is actually over here. And that's how we do a circumcision today.
That would be an inverted cone of the skin. It's like when you're pulling it over the gland.
Okay. Here's the way the male organ looks like when the baby's born. We pull up the skin. Okay. Down here is the gland. We slice. That's a simple way to do a circumcision. So today we want to make sure that the gland didn't come up. So we put a shield, which is basically, we just take a metal piece that goes over here, and then we cut on that metal piece, and that the metal piece has a little slit in the middle. We slip it on, make sure the gland doesn't come up, and then we cut. And now what we've cut is the skin over here. This skin from here up is what's called in halacha orla. Orla. Technically, it's all skin color from the stomach up. But the Torah says, cut off the orla. Cut off the skin that's covering the male organ. So we have to cut over here. We cut that skin. Now, that's what a circumcision is. Ah, there's a step two. So this is step one. Okay? What we're doing in a circumcision is we are waiting till the eighth day, right? Circumcision is not kosher before the eighth day for a Jew. And when the baby's 8 days old, meaning if the baby was born on Monday, so Monday is day one, and next week Monday is day eight. Yes? The baby's born on Monday, so Monday is one. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday. Monday is day eight. And we will circumcise the baby on the following week. And this is, in a nutshell, what we do. So far, so good?
Rabbi, wait, can you turn it? So, at the bottom is, like, the people who are left uncircumcised, isn't there only one layer of your skin on the bottom?
We'll get there. Let's move forward. Hashem created us that we have another layer of skin. There is a small membrane that runs under the outer skin. We've described it as though there are two layers of skin so far, right? We said there's the gland, and then there's the outer skin. But what stops liquids from coming down into the body? So Hashem created us that we have another layer of skin that runs like this. It runs from the bottom of the gland and attaches here. From the bottom of the gland, it attaches here. So, when an uncircumcised person has an erection, what happens is this skin peels backwards. And if we were to look at a person's erection when they're uncircumcised, it would look like this. What's happened is the lower membrane folds backwards, and the person can actually look circumcised because you see the red gland on top. The membrane over here folds back, and you look at the person, and what you see is the gland. Now, not all people who are uncircumcised look like that. Sometimes a person who's uncircumcised will look more like this. Okay, I'm drawing backwards, but which basically means that the gland will protrude through this skin, and this skin stays like that. Meaning, this lower skin, what we call aura priya, is very sensitive, but it doesn't always. An uncircumcised person can technically pull the outer skin back and fold this backwards. It is probably one of the, if not the most sensitive skins a person has. This skin that's just under the gland, this lower membrane. But some people, when they have an erection, it folds back all the way. Some people, it stays underneath, and the erection just protrudes through the hole, this hole, which grows larger as a person grows. So when you look at a person, just because you see the full gland, doesn't mean they're circumcised. You could see a person who, you see his full gland, but technically he's never had a circumcision because this hole has become so big that the sleeve falls down and he always looks like this. So how do you check if a person's circumcised? We look when a person has an erection. Can you pull this back up? If he's uncircumcised, then this can go back up. It might be pulled down, but you can pull it back up. If he's circumcised, then this doesn't go back up. After circumcision, you just cut this off. There's no way of pulling it back up.
Why would that ever need to happen?
I didn't hear you.
Why would that ever need to be?
Why do we ever check that? Because we've had students come here whose circumcisions were done by all kinds of witch doctors and stuff. We had a guy here who told us when he was 13, a part of the tribal thing he went through was he had to stand there, and the whole tribe surrounded him. And I don't know if I should continue the story.
I get where this is going.
Whoever wants to hear, I'll tell you the story after class. It was pretty vicious.
So, in a nutshell,
not everyone gets a kosher circumcision.
Okay, some people
circumcision after they're circumcised, when there's an erection, the skin can still come up. They still have a lot of skin left over.
But it's some sort of kind of circumcision that who knows what actually.
Right? We have that.
Wait, so what do you do in that situation? Like, what does the main.
We fix the circumcision. The hospital knows how to do it. Okay, coming back to our. When we do circumcision, basically, we pull this skin up, and the skin that's attached down here gets pulled up with it. It also has a lot of elasticity. And when we're going to cut over here, what's going to happen is. Post-circumcision, it's going to look like this. Okay, here's, we cut over here, right? We cut over here, which is the equivalent of cutting here. So this skin is cut. Now this skin was also cut. Remember, it went up with it. So this skin will also be cut a little bit, right? Because part of it gets cut with the orla. When you cut the orla up here, you're also cutting the upper tip of this skin as you pull it up with it. And so you end up with the circumcision where the outer skin got cut off. So it's your cut is here. The lower membrane, the upper tip of it gets cut off. What do we do at this point? We make a slit in this skin and fold it backwards to here. And then it stays there and it remains there and it heals with the rest of the skin and finish. On adult circumcisions, what do? We fold this back and stitch this skin to this skin. Okay? We want to stitch it closed because adults have larger, adults have veins, adults have, the bleeding is more serious, there's much more skin that has to heal. So on adult circumcisions, we want to close off the area. So what we're going to do is stop the bleeding, we cauterize or stitch whatever veins need to be stitched, and then we fold back the lower membrane and stitch it together with the outer skin. On a baby, this fuses and heals on its own. You don't have to stitch anything, it just nature heals it together. Okay, on an adult, we stitch it together nowadays. That's common practice in adult circumcisions. So that's a quick overview of what we do. This is the orla, the outer skin, we cut it. This is the ora pria, the membrane, that also has to be, you make a slit in it, you tear it in two and put it down. Now, do we want to understand more? Yes. Sure, in a hospital.
Okay.
We anesthetize. I would say that if you're fortunate, the adult circumcision is done by a moel. And if not, then you get it done by a doctor or a urologist. And when I'm off the record, I'll explain the advantage, the medical advantage of doing it by the moel. I'm not going to do that on the video.
Because he has more experience.
I'm not going to go there right now. When I'm off the record, I'll explain to you what are the advantages and disadvantages. But in a hospital, you can get it done by your urologist or by a moel. We'll leave it at that for now.
Have to be like kosher certified or something.
In order for a bris milah, we will talk about the halachos of a bris milah after we finish the anatomy. When we finish the anatomy, then we'll start going through the halachos. I understand. Yes.
Regarding if a grown person needs to be gets a brit milah, the only way it can be checked is when it's basically an erection.
Like, technically yes, practically no. Depends on who you ask. The average person will tell you the only way to check is with an erection. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Practically, if you've studied it enough, then there are ways to check without an erection. There are ways to just look at the scars, and you can estimate from the scars where the cut was, how much was cut, how much is left over. Most people don't know how to do that. That's not, I'm saying, technically, medically, I'm saying it is possible to just look at the scars and be able to work your way backwards from the scars to understand what was cut and how much. But again, in halacha, it doesn't say that. Most people would just do the simple, wait till there's an erection and see. If a person's uncertain about whether their circumcision was enough, that the doctor cut off enough or whatever, wherever they did the circumcision, so when a person wakes up in the morning, so most men have an erection when they awaken in the morning, so a person can check when he has an erection. Can he pull up skin over the gland? And usually he won't be able to, and then he knows that his circumcision was kosher. Okay. Nowadays we have a method that makes it a little bit simpler. When we come to do the circumcision, we take something very dull, looks like a pen, we call it a probe, and we stick it in here inside the hole. And basically what we're doing is we're just separating. The gland is like sticky onto the organ. So when a baby's born, it's stuck on. We stick in the probe and we just go around two or three times, and that separates the membrane from the gland. And what we achieve with that is that when we're going to pull up the arla, when we're going to pull up the foreskin, so then instead of a little bit of the skin coming up with us, we can pull up most of the membrane. And in one cut, we finish the circumcision. Instead of having to cut once and then slit again and fold back, what we're accomplishing by sticking in a probe and separating between the membrane and the gland is that most of the membrane will come up with us for the circumcision. When you grab it, you're actually going to be able to take from down here all of that membrane up with you. And after you're cut, you're going to have only this little bit of membrane left, which either falls down on its own or you push it down and you're done. So the baby gets cut only once, and at one cut does it all. So that's what you see them all sometimes going with a probe. Before the circumcision, he's just separating. It's as though, you know, if he could stick his finger in, he'd stick his finger in. When a person grows up, the hole is bigger. He could do it with his finger. For a baby, you need something smaller. You stick in a probe and you separate it. That's, in a nutshell, a circumcision. Now we can discuss what is mitzitza. What knife do we use? What day do we do a circumcision? Who could do a circumcision? When do we do a circumcision? After the circumcision, the place that's bleeding is here. So we have to manage it, right? The bleeding is not on the gland. People look at the red part and they go, oh my gosh, he just got a bris mila. Well, the gland isn't hurt at all. Nothing happened to the gland. The cut is down here. That's where it hurts. That's where we need to stop the bleeding, etc. We have a picture. You understand? Excuse the pun? Yes? Okay, yes, sir.
What was the shield again? How does that work?
The shield, the purpose of the shield is when you pull up the skin, you want to make sure the gland doesn't come up with it. You're pulling up the skin. How do you know where the gland is? You put in a shield that ensures that the gland is beneath the shield and you're cutting the skin without hitting the gland.
The shield is round?
The shield basically looks like a fork. Basically, it's a piece of metal that has a slit in the middle. And you just stick it on, like this. I will bring a shield. There's action Thursday night. I'll bring all the equipment. You'll see it. Okay, we have more questions. Now we can begin understanding the halachot. What really happens with a circumcision? So number one, a baby boy is born mazel tov. We're going to count 8 days and do a circumcision. We hire a moel, we call him up. We're going to pay him a nice amount of money, 600 shekel, 800 shekel, 1,000 shekel. You'll see how much you can afford. But the guy is doing a surgery here. He's giving you a tremendous service and a mitzvah. So, every Jew can learn to be a moel. It's a mitzvah for every Jew, and it's not complicated the way you just understood. So our baby's born. And when do we do circumcision? We said we count 8 days. If a baby's born on Shabbos, we do circumcision on Shabbos. Unless it was a C-section. baby that's born from a C-section is not done, does not get a bris on Shabbos. Now, the only time a bris is done on Shabbos is if the bris is on the eighth day. What happens if the baby was sick? You couldn't do a circumcision. The doctor said he has to get stronger. So then the baby becomes healthy on a Friday afternoon, and they say, you could do a circumcision tomorrow. You wait till Sunday. No circumcision on Shabbos unless it's the eighth day. And it was not a C-section. The baby has to have been born naturally. It's a gzer sakasa. We derive it from the verse. There's no logic that I know of. It's just the verse says, if the baby is born the way she became pregnant, that's the wording. If he came out the way he came in, so then he gets a circumcision even on Shabbos. We always wait till the eighth day. Yes, even on a C-section, it's on the eighth day. Yes.
C-section? It's like when you pull the baby out of the stomach.
An operation. They cut open the woman's stomach to take out the baby. Yes, Daniel.
I heard, I don't know where they got the source from, but they said that they all have to be observant.
We'll get to that. We're not up to that yet.
But not all doctors are observant.
Oh, that's a good point. We'll get to that.
What did you ask?
They all have to, I heard, I don't know what they have the source for, but the rabbi can explain that the mole has to be observant Jew.
Okay.
And not all doctors that are Jewish in Israel are observant.
We'll get there. Let's begin with our ideal scenario, and then we'll go over to complications. So, the baby's born. If the baby is healthy, he's a good weight, and everything's normal, so then on the eighth day we will do circumcision. It is your mitzvah as the father to do the circumcision. Ah, you might say, I don't know how. Okay, so then you hire a moel. Call the moel well in advance. You set up a time. We don't necessarily do it in shul. Circumcision can be done at home. Ideally, we have 10 people present in honor of the mitzvah. Ideally, we do a meal. Ideally, we do it in a hall. If you're going to do it in the morning, bright and early, which is a nice way to do it. So then, people are davening. You bring the baby to shul and you do it in shul. But if you're going to do it in the afternoon, which is not the ideal way, ideally we don't delay doing a mitzvah, we do it in the morning. But if for whatever reason I'm doing it at 10 in the morning or 11 in the morning, then I'll do it at whatever hall I'm doing it. We don't go to a shul special to do a bris. We do it in shul because we assume you want to do it in the morning right away. In the morning right away, everyone's still at davening. Instead of bringing the crowd to a hall, we bring the baby to the crowd and we do the mitzvah in shul. But there's no ideal to do a bris in shul. The ideal is to do the bris as soon as we can, which naturally will very often fit into doing it in shul. So we do the bris in the morning or on some point on the eighth day. If the baby was born on Monday, today, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, sunset was 4:50. So he was born at 4 o'clock. That's still Monday. That still counts as day one. And then next week, Monday, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I can do the bris. Because that's day 8. I don't have to wait 7 series of 24 hours. What happens if the baby's sick? The baby's in an incubator. The baby's in distress. So then the halacha says, when a baby's sick, you wait 7 series of 24 hours after the baby gets cured. So the baby could have jaundice. The baby could have heart trouble. The baby could have breathing trouble. Whatever it is, could be the baby gets better after 4 hours. So I had this, a friend of mine had a baby on Friday, twins, and the babies were in distress until about Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the baby's all better, and the doctors give them the all clear sign. They put him in the regular nursery. Your baby's fine. Baby, the father calls me up and says, we have a circumcision next Friday. I say, very nice. He says, yes, it's down in the south. I say, very nice. I start asking questions. He tells me the story. I say, I'll get you a different moel. He says, why? I say, because you have to do the bris Friday afternoon in the south after 3 o'clock. Because the baby was in distress and he only got the all clear sign at 3 o'clock. So you can't just do it Friday morning. He said, why? We want to do it 8 o'clock, a nice breakfast, everyone will come. I said, you can't. You have to wait 7 series of 24 hours. Which means that if Shabbos is at 4:15, 4:30, You have to do the bris after 3 o'clock. You're not going to do this big fancy bris. You can invite people for the Friday night dinner. You can make early Shabbos after the bris and sit down and do davening and have a meal. But I'm not schlepping down to the south and leaving my family alone and not being there for Shabbos. I'll help you find someone else. Because the bris has to be after 7 series of 24 hours. When? When the baby was ill, when the baby had some point of distress, some kind of illness that affected his whole body or that was serious enough that we have to wait. Now, let's say the baby only got better a day later or 2 days later. Again, we'll wait 7 series of 24 hours. This is the mohel's job to hear the story and figure out, does this warrant waiting 7 series of 24 hours? How serious was the baby's issue? Yes, sir.
The case you said, would they be obligated to do it 3 p.m. on Friday?
Or? Sure, 100%.
They couldn't wait until Sunday?
No. You don't postpone a bris more than you have to. If they could do it on the 8th day, they have to do it on the 8th day. I had my own son born, and he was born prematurely, and he was in the neonative intensive care unit for a month, and then he finally got out, and then we thought to do a bris. The doctor tells me, I want him to be home safely for a week to make sure everything's okay. I said, okay, so after that week, we'll start counting the 7 days. Because after that week, you're giving me the all clear sign that he's healthy. We come home. 2 days later, he's back in the intensive care unit. He had this blueness around his lips. We couldn't figure out if he was breathing well, if his heart was functioning well. They run a whole series of tests, and they say everything's fine. Well, why is he blue around the lips? We don't know. So we go to our doctor, and he says, we don't know why he's blue around the lips. No bris milah. We have to wait and make sure he's healthy. So, fine, okay. A month later, it's the winter afternoon. This time of year, sunset is 4:40. We have a 12 o'clock appointment with the doctor. We meet the pediatrician. He checks the baby and he says, you know what? He has a vein that runs here next to his lip. And that's what makes his mouth seem blue. Everything's fine. I say, oh, so he's been okay a whole month. He says, yeah. I say, oh, so we should have done the bris 3 weeks ago. We just didn't know it. Meaning now, retroactively, we know that he should have had the bris. He says, yes. I say, so we don't have any time to wait. Technically, he should have a bris now. He says, you're the rabbi, but medically, a month ago he was okay. Now we know that a month ago, retroactively, he was okay. I say, okay. No one's around, right? I have 4 hours till sunset. You don't do a bris at night. My family isn't there. No one even knows about it. My kids are in school. I have to go pick up the kids. So I called my good friends at Machon Meir, Michael Arosh, and a few other guys, and they scrambled and they put together a few tables. And we called a local bagel store. We bought a few bagels. We got some food on the table. We called a bunch of people. We had the Machon Meir guys and another 15 guys. And we had this makeshift bris. I call the person who taught me Mila, and I say, I'm doing a bris this afternoon. You're invited. And he says, calm down. Why are you in such a rush? None of your guests are going to make it. I said, right? And he says, no. So wait a day or two and do it normally. I said, why? I have a mitzvah to do today. Why would I push it off? He said, so that your father-in-law can make it. I said, it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch, you postpone a bris so your father-in-law can make it. I can do the bris, and I should do the bris. He said, that's not the way we do things. I said, okay. I called Rav Neventzel, the rabbi of the old city, who I had the good fortune till today. I learned by him. And I asked him, I said, you know, we were hoping you would be the sandik, the one to hold the baby during the circumcision. But I think we should do the bris now. He said, you're right. There's no reason to wait. You're 100% right. You can do circumcision without the grandfather being there. There's no reason to postpone the bris. You have a mitzvah. Do it now. It's okay. My father-in-law made it. My father-in-law was there. We did the bris. 2 days later, the kid was back in the hospital. If we would have waited, it could be he wouldn't have had a circumcision until he was a year and a half. Because I didn't wait, and I did it right away, because he had difficulty breathing. So I'm saying he was fine. He was fine and the circumcision didn't affect him and everything was great. But had I waited 2 days, I don't know, we wouldn't, then already we would not have been able to circumcise him.
Is that important that the bris be done as close, like, I mean, as soon as
soon as you can, you have a mitzvah, yeah. The bris represents the covenant between us and Hashem, that we are His people. And we don't wait to circumcise a person. As soon as we can, we do the mitzvah. So we don't wait. Even if it's a postponed bris, you can't do it on Shabbos, but if you could do it on Sunday, you do it on Sunday and not on Monday. You could do it on Monday. You do Monday, not Tuesday. What do we do when we do a bris? So we just understood the anatomy of a bris. After the bris, so our sages say you have to make sure the bleeding stops. But first, you have to make sure the bleeding starts. You have to make sure that there's adequate blood flow to the place where you did the circumcision. So Chazal said, do something called metzitza. What's metzitza? You apply suction to get blood flow to the place. Well, in ancient times, they didn't know the medicine of sterilization. They didn't know how to get blood flow and then stop the blood flow. So they would do the following. They would take alcohol. They would take wine into their mouth. And then they would spit it out onto the circumcision. And that would sterilize the place. And then they would suck on the wound, which is a natural reaction, by the way. Whenever people have wounds, it's a natural reaction to put it to their mouths. And there is, in the saliva, there are components that help bleeding stop. And so they would put their mouth on the male organ, suck to get the bleeding, and it would also help the bleeding stop, and then bandage it. Today, some people still do it that way. You will go to Brisbane where you'll see Mohalim who will put wine in their mouth, put it on the baby, suck on the organ, and then bandage it. I don't do it that way. I take a syringe. I take a hollow syringe. I put it on the organ. I apply suction. It's filled with gauze, so the blood doesn't hit my mouth. My saliva doesn't hit the baby. We make sure there's adequate blood flow. We bandage the baby, and the baby goes home. Normally, if a circumcision is done accurately and the baby has no medical complications, regular baby, 10 days after the circumcision, you can't tell he was circumcised. And the same thing, by the way, by adults. Adults who had their circumcision done by Mohalim will very often go to work that day. The Mohel says don't. The Mohel says rest. I had in my class many people, many students who underwent adult circumcisions and that night were in class learning. You know, and I'd always say, don't you have to rest? And what happens with the urologist will talk off the record. But someone asked over here, do Mohalim do adults? Well, the way we do it is the best way for... In the United States, there are states with the... You guys have koach? Can I scare you a little bit and tell you what modern science does to a baby in a circumcision? Our method for circumcision is we take the gland, we measure the right place, we take a knife like that. How long was the baby suffering for? If you cut real slow, 1 second. If you cut normally, so half a second. Okay, that's the amount of pain a baby has. Then he's cut, you bandage him, you're done. So the baby is in distress for, I don't know, because we use a surgical blade that's so sharp that you don't even feel it when it cuts you. So I'm not, we do circumcisions where the baby doesn't even cry. We've had circumcisions where the baby doesn't cry. You end the circumcision and no one knows you did it. I always tell the parents, if you pay attention, the baby cries most when you take off his pants and he feels the cold air. That's when the baby does most of his crying. You know, if you pay attention, when does the baby really wail his guts off and the mother's wringing her hands in the women's section? It's when you took off his pants and he's hitting the cold air. That's when babies cry. The actual circumcision, it's a second. 2 seconds tops. What does modern science do with a circumcision?
What about with
guys, I hope you're not squeamish because this is real painful.
What about with an adult? How long does it
take? It's a different story. Modern science takes the orla and lifts it. And then takes a very sophisticated instrument, which is basically a set of pliers. And they call it a clamp. And closes it over here on the skin, on the foreskin. And then waits for 2 minutes. Can you imagine any part of your body having a plier closed on it for 2 minutes?
Is that for blood flow? To stop
the blood flow. What's the idea? So that when the doctor does a circumcision, he just takes a knife and cuts off the dead skin. There's no bleeding. And the doctor says, look at what a beautiful job we did. He brings the baby to the parents and he says, you see, no bleeding. We do it the best way. Right, but the parents weren't in the surgery room when they closed the clamp on their baby, and the baby spent 2.5 minutes wailing his head off in severe pain. They measured the baby's heart rate, they measured the baby's stress levels, and state after state has been passing laws that you may not do the circumcision other than the Jewish way. Because the non-Jewish way is very cruel. The only thing is, you're not in the room, you don't see it. So you'll ask me, why don't they anesthetize the organ? And the answer is because the cream that we use, an anesthetic cream, is called Emla cream. And Emla cream, you know, babies are sometimes born when they have skin tags, like next to their ear, and they cut them off. So what do? They take Emla cream, they put it on the skin tag, they put a gauze pad with the cream and a Band-Aid. You wait a half hour, the skin doesn't feel anything, they cut it off, the baby doesn't feel anything, and you send them home, no problem. But you can't do that on the male organ for two reasons. One being that there's a very harsh allergic reaction that some babies have. Babies have been known to react such that their organ became this big. And that's not an exaggeration. And no one wants to risk having a baby with an organ this big. It's not a joke. So the doctors don't do that. When they do circumcision with the clamp, that baby's suffering his head off. That's no joke. You're taking probably the most sensitive skin in the body and you're closing it with a clamp. You're closing it. So the doctor walks out of the surgery room after 5 minutes and he gives the parent the baby and he says, look, it's beautiful. It's not even bleeding. Right, but the parent doesn't know what his baby just underwent in there. And who knows what it does to a kid psychologically, I'm saying, to have such pain. Our method is almost pain-free. I'm saying afterwards, you're bandaging him. It's not comfortable. No one's saying that when you bandage a wound, it's fun. But you can't compare. I'm saying it's, yes, sir.
What about the, I heard that you get washed off with some wine for the baby
Usually, at the circumcision, we give the baby a gauze pad with some grape juice or wine to suck on. The baby's going to get a total of a half a spoonful of wine. I'm saying it's, the baby usually sleeps well after that. Yeah, usually it calms them down. But, yes.
Okay, do they always do this method you just told? Or
in hospitals? That's the standard method. Even in Israel, when Arabs come in and ask for a circumcision, that's what they get. And if you go to a hospital and as a Jew and ask for your son to get a circumcision, if it's not a Jewish hospital, so then that's the standard method today. It's shifting slowly. But the standard method is the clamp method. That's modern medicine likes that. It's very clean. The doctor doesn't have to get dirty. No bandaging. Everything's very nice.
So when Muslims do it at age 7, whatever.
Depends on how they do it. We today in the hospitals, once a child is over a half a year old, they do it in the hospital. Once they do it in the hospital, then usually they give a shot of an anesthetic to the organ. The problem is that when a child is very young, so then there is a prevalence to having allergic reactions to the anesthetics in the organ. So it's not so simple to do that. When it comes to mitzitza, sucking the blood, so that's where it's been said, I don't know how many occurrences have happened, that the moel has had herpes and then the child got it and either died or had brain damage. You have to deal with the fact. Every day, people don't know if they have herpes. You could shake someone's hands. There are millions of carriers that just don't know that they have herpes. But you have to deal with reality. Every day, thousands of children get mitzitza bepeh. Thousands of children get circumcised by mohalim who do it with their mouths. If you go to Bell's, Every day, if you go to the Bell's Base Medrash, there are 5 to 10 circumcisions being done every day with Metzitza Bepeh. You go to Satmar, you go to Gur. I'm saying you go around the world, you go to Brooklyn, to Borough Park, Flatbush, all around the world, New Square, Europe. Mohalim are doing this. I don't do it. My tradition is not to do it. In Germany, they didn't do this. 100 years ago, they didn't do it either. But there are those who say, no, I have to do it this way. And we can't fight them because the statistic shows that it's not dangerous. I'm saying more people die from the flu each year than die in 10 years from Metzitza Bepeh. I'm saying it's not, you can't say it's so dangerous because the numbers don't side with that.
Why is their tradition so important that it would even jeopardize a case of pikuach nefesh?
Again, you can't say that something that's done every day 1,000 times and no one gets hurt from it except for, you know, one in 500,000, 1 in 1,000,000. There are things that we do that are far more risky and we don't consider them pikuach nefesh. So, again, my tradition is not to do it. But I can't say that whoever does it is irresponsible. Saying it's far-fetched enough that you can't really say it's wrong to do it. You could say I'd rather not. Fine, I also would rather not. But their argument is that throughout our history, the governments have tried to get us to change and ultimately stop doing circumcisions. And once you give in on one level, then you never know where the next level will be. I can't say that their argument is totally off the rocker. I'm saying, look around the world and see what's been happening over the years. I'm saying, even in this decade.
But that only applies outside of
the
Here in Israel, 3 years ago, there was a fight to change the whole circumcision process, the legalization in Israel. Any person's allowed to do a circumcision. You don't need a license because it's a mitzvah for every parent. So technically, you don't need a license. You're legally to do circumcision.
And I saw a group in Tel Aviv protesting Brit Mila. They're all the time.
Okay. Fine. Okay, what's relevant to us? What's relevant to us is a few things. Number one, a circumcision done by a non-Jew. We don't consider that a kosher circumcision. A circumcision done at nighttime. A circumcision done before the 8th day. Very often, if a person grew up and their parents are either non-observant or less observant, so the parents might give the child a circumcision in the hospital. Could be it's done before the 8th day. Could be it's done by someone not Jewish or non-observant. Could be it's done at nighttime. So we have to verify that the circumcision was done in a kosher manner. What if it was not done in a kosher manner? So then what do we do? So what we do is very simple. There are times I do this 2-3 times a day. What we basically do is a prick. And a prick, we draw one drop of blood. Most people who I've done it to haven't even felt it when I did it. Basically, we draw one drop of blood for the sake of the mitzvah of a circumcision. That's what's called in halacha, hatafat dam brit, causing one drop of blood for the sake of the covenant with God. So a person walks around and he's fully circumcised, and then one day he asks his parents, hey, what'd you do to celebrate my circumcision? And they go, celebrate? You just came out of the hospital that way. You were 2 days old, and they just offered us this service. So we said, yes. So the kid goes, what? So my circumcision's not kosher? And they say, no. We checked it. It's beautiful. The doctors say it was a good job. And he says, no. Halachically, you did it before the 8th day. It's not kosher. You did it by a non-Jew. It's not kosher. So if I have one of those two, I have to. So they say, son, there's nothing left. You're fine. No. Halachically, he has to do atafat dam brit. It's, again, a very easy, simple process. Some people will do, they'll take, you know, that little tool that people who are diabetic, they use to prick themselves. So it's basically like a little spring that they put on their finger and they push it, and then a drop of blood comes out. So some people do it that way. I prefer doing it with my tools because you don't even feel the prick when I do it. But whatever, it's all kosher. I recommend it, you know, like, don't do it at home because make sure you're doing it right if you're already going to do it. But that's in a nutshell, that's atafat dam brit. There are a few facts you should know. Circumcision does not protect against AIDS, even though it does reduce greatly the odds of contracting AIDS. That's why the UN funded millions of people getting circumcision in the US. That means if the odds of a person contracting HIV by intercourse with someone who has HIV is, let's say, 1 in 2, when they're going to be with that person, when they're circumcised, so then their odds drop to, let's say, 1 in 50, 1 in 40. But let's say they're going to be intimate with 40 or 50 people that have HIV, or the same person 40 or 50 times, then their odds are they're putting themselves at a high risk. It's not a protection that once a person is circumcised, they for sure won't get it. But it does reduce the odds greatly. Same thing with cancer of the male organ. Cancer very often develops because when people are uncircumcised, so they tend to get infections because the foreskin causes droplets of urine to stay there and dirt to stay there, so a person is much more prone to infection when they're uncircumcised. Well, even if a person takes a shower and he doesn't dry himself well, he dried himself well, but then he urinated and didn't dry himself well. In a nutshell, the area ends up being moist a lot, and that can cause fungus and infection, and those infections can become cancerous. People who are circumcised, it's almost unheard of that Jews have cancer of the male organ. I'm not talking about other parts of the organ, but I'm saying the gland, where non-Jews or uncircumcised people can very often get cancer there. By Jews, it's almost unheard of. So today we know there are many medical benefits to being circumcised. But that's not why we do it. We do it because we have a mitzvah from Hashem. It's a covenant we have with God. It's a sign that we are His people. For generations, they used to mock us and say, you're mutilating your children's body. Today, we know that we're not only are we doing God's will, we're also doing something that's medically beneficial, something which we didn't know in the past. Yes?
I also heard that the woman doesn't get cancer in the diaphragm if her partner is circumcised.
Okay, I don't know. So women also have a covenant with God, and that is the laws of family purity. Just as we have the mitzvah to circumcise a child, which is not an easy thing. It's not easy on the 8th day to take your baby and hand him over and have him operated on. Women have this mitzvah that they maintain the laws of family purity. They're careful when they're menstruating, and then to have 7 clean days and then go to mikvah. That's their equivalent. And now we will go through the parasha now that we had an overview of circumcision. Yes, sir?
Is there like some comparison to
Yes. Yes, the actual act of circumcising is compared to bringing a sacrifice, because you are giving your child over, and there are those that have the custom that when they prepare the child for circumcision, they actually wrap a cloth around his legs. Right, yeah, something like that, yeah. It happens to be my tradition, even though I don't do it. It's the Yekish tradition, but yeah. Yeah? Yes, sir?
When you don't know if a circumcision is kosher or not, can you tell just by looking at it with absolute certainty if it's kosher or not, or would you have to go back in the records?
You could tell if anatomically what was done is kosher, but halachically is a different question. Was it done by day or night? Was it done before the 8th day? Was it done by someone observing? That's a different question.
Is that why for Gerim, they always do the dot of blood?
No. For Gerim, they have to do that Tafat Tamrit, because part of the gear process is a circumcision. So you have to do an equivalent.
Even if you had a kosher circumcision?
Usually. There are exceptions. If a person has that question, he will ask. There can be exceptions. A person has a Jewish father, and then the Jewish father took a kosher moel, and he did everything right. There can be situations where it can be forgotten. Each person will ask their question. Okay.